Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Luke Edwards, Northeast football correspondent with the Daily Telegraph, friend of the show.
Very much so.
This time last year, was this weekend last year, you made your wonderful speech against the English hooligans in O'Sullivan's pub beside the Moulin Rouge in the centre of Paris.
Wonderful memories. I mean, I got absolute dog's abuse on Twitter for slagging off English fans. But I mean, to go back to that, I grew up in the 80s when it was a real scourge of English football, and I heard all the same excuses about minorities. And yes, it was in a very sweaty bar next to the Moulin Rouge where I endeared myself to a room full of Ireland fans and had a standing ovation, which I've dined out on ever since.
David Snaid, a new friend of Off the Ball, is also with us from the Irish Daily Mail. We're going to talk about tomorrow's big World Cup qualifier between the Republic of Ireland and Austria over the next little while. It is live and Off the Ball with myself and Kevin Kilbane. We'll be at the Aviva Stadium all afternoon. But before we get to that, Luke, I want to talk to you about an article you've written for The Blizzard, which anybody who's interested in football writing probably subscribes to. It's all online now as well. And is this the first time you've written for The Blizzard?
It is, yes, the first time, yeah.
So you're writing about the club you support and the club you've supported throughout your life, Leighton Orient, and it's a brilliantly written piece, and you've linked it in with your own life and how important Leighton Orient has been, and how, as your life has gone through various stages, it's always been a constant. I want to get to the very end of it, though, because in the last paragraph, you write about the news that you recently received that you had skin cancer.
Yes.
Which, I got to be honest, came as quite a shock to me.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm okay. It's some payoff line, isn't it? I mean, it's if I'm being flippant. It was a bit of a shock. I'm only 39, but yeah, it was. If we're going to give health advice out on this show, I had a strange mole on my back, which thankfully I was rather paranoid about from about the age of 28, 29, so for the best part of a decade. So every time I went to the GP, I got it checked out, and actually before the Euros, which my wife subsequently was very angry about, just before I went to the Euros last summer, I went to the GP, and the GP said, "I don't like the look of that." And I said, yeah, okay, fine, I'll sort that out when I get back from the Euros, and then didn't. And then it started to itch, I started to be aware of it, because if it's on your back, it's very, very difficult to see. And then, yeah, just in March, I think just before the last set of Euros, I was referred to the hospital, had it removed. Yes, it came back as melanoma, so I've subsequently had surgery. But yeah, it seems to have all gone, hopefully.
Great.
So apart from a rather large scar on my back, I should be fine.
Brilliant. Well, that is very good to hear.
At least you have your football team to cheer you up.
You what, sorry?
At least you have your football team.
Yeah,
that's
just two-footed, that, isn't it? Yeah, like the Blizzard piece is basically the Leighton Orient, a club I've supported. I was born in Leightonstone. They were my local team. My entire family supports them. And they've just been relegated from the Football League for the first time. But more than that, they are being run into the ground by an Italian now, Francesco Bacchetti. And the story of the article is why it should matter that a football club like Leighton Orient, it should matter that people don't just allow them to go out of business. And in London, a city of 9 million people, Orient only have crowds of about 5,000 people. So does it really matter? And then without talking in too much depth about the article, I then go through various stages of my life from childhood, through personal trauma, death, etc., etc., and relate it all to, the Leighton Orient have been the one constant thing throughout my life. And are very, very important to me and very important to my family. So it is very emotional. It was a bit like a therapy session writing it, but I've been very much overwhelmed by the response to it. So I'm probably going to get a bit emotional on air now, but no, it has been fantastic.
We'll put the link up on Off the Ball on our Twitter account so anybody who wants to read it can get it. Just on the Leighton Orient story, like you'd say crowds of 5,000, but there's a lot of good news stories in English football, or so we're sold, in terms of the Premier League. Bournemouth. Look where Bournemouth were just 8-9 years ago, on the verge of extinction. Yet here they are now, spending 120 grand a week on Jermaine Defoe, offering 15, 20 million pounds on players. That's the good news side of this. It's not that long ago that Leighton Orient, and you write this in the piece, were essentially within a penalty kick of getting up to the Championship.
Mm-hmm.
The way it has all gone terribly wrong under the owner, it strikes me from your piece that this could have been avoided, that this was almost, or maybe it's clearly, vindictiveness.
I think it's got to that stage, yes. I mean, it's interesting because when he took over, I mean, he's a very, very rich man. I mean, he bought a £22 million mansion in Mayfair, and he only paid £4 million for Leighton Orient. He's got the money, and when he took over from Barry Hearn, there was a view that we could do a Bournemouth. I think that was the dream, but you've got to be very, very careful what you wish for with any owners. I'm not going to just say foreign owners because I think that's a little bit xenophobic. There are a lot of corrupt British owners of football clubs. Now,
were there doubts about him before he even came in? Like, was it not?
It was all a little bit shady. I mean, without drawing stereotypes, I mean, he made his money. He's an Italian businessman who made his money in waste management.
There are no connotations
with that whatsoever, are there? So, but the problem is now is the club's up for sale, and there are people interested in buying it because it's in London. And that appeals to people. Mm. There's the CEO of Dunkin' Donuts, the great American healthy eating company. He's actually a Leighton Orient fan. He was born in Woodford, and he supposedly wants to buy them. But basically, nobody can really communicate with this guy. Now, I can't say too much, probably for legal reasons, but it is all a little bit dubious. I mean, it is all a little bit dubious. And there is a level of vindictiveness there that basically the fans protested against him in November. And from then on, he's basically pulled all the money and to the point where we've got a winding up order next month for unpaid bills. So this is a guy who owns a £22 million mansion. He can pay the club photographer £6,000.
Yeah.
Easily, and he hasn't.
So there's a danger that the winding up order will be processed before the club can even be sold, or that discussions can even begin over the sale of the club.
Yeah, I think, well, certainly we'll go into administration. I don't understand why, if people want to buy it, he won't sell it.
Is there a valuation, or has that been made public?
He wants the £4 million back, but I think the debt's over.
Would he possibly get that?
That's supposedly what people have been offering. It's all very,
very... He doesn't
own
the ground, though.
He doesn't own the ground.
Barry Hearn owns ground, which presumably is the most valuable commodity in that area.
I think if he owned the ground, and to be fair to Barry Hearn, he's been criticised by Orient fans, but he kept the ground in his name to protect them long term. Also protecting his own self-interest, of course. It's a very valuable piece of...
Just from a geographical point of view, then, where exactly is Leighton Orient's ground?
Right on the edge of the Olympic Park.
Didn't he want to go in there? Didn't he want to actually have to be a tenant in the Olympics?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he did. Slightly weirdly. Bearing in mind it holds 60,000 people. But anyway, so it's very, very valuable real estate with great transport links on the edge of the Olympic Park. You know, I don't doubt for one second that if Francesco Pacetti owned the stadium, there would not be a football club anymore. I think the fact that the stadium still exists means he can't really get his money back by selling off the real estate. Yes.
Is there a possibility then, and you have a pretty deep-rooted knowledge of this, that the best case scenario for Leighton Orient is actually the club does wind up over the next few months, and then the club re-emerges, and this has happened in this country and it's happened in other places, that the club re-emerges,
the Phoenix club, yeah,
that it is essentially Leighton Orient, it's backed by the fans, it's owned by the fans, and maybe it has the owner of Dunkin' Donuts backing it has several people backing it, and that ultimately it is still Leighton Orient.
Yeah,
I still be able to play in the ground owned by Barry Hearn.
Yeah, I think there is a case to say that now, and there's the Leighton Orient Fans Trust, which has done a fantastic job. They've got a fighting fund of about £250,000 ready to... I don't think Barry Hearn could actually sit by and let them go under either. I suspect now it's got to the point where people are waiting to see whether they go into administration, and once they go into administration they'll be pretty cheaper to buy. So it's all very uncertain, but you know, we're into June now, and Hartlepool United, who came down with Leighton Orient, have signed four players and have a manager. We don't have a manager, and we basically have a youth team. That's all we have. So whatever is going on, we are in dire straits ahead of the new season. And I think personally, if I was going to put, you know, any money on it, I think they will go out of business. I just think they will go out of business and they'll reform. I think that's maybe what needs to happen.
As we've seen happen with Rangers, we've seen it happen with Fiorentina, we've seen it happen with clubs over a whole, as Nathan said, several clubs in this country, including Cork, who are going very well at the moment and are top in the League of Ireland over here. So it's not the end of the road, if that is the road that ultimately the club goes down.
And as long as there are people like me, and I'm not a proper fan anymore, I mean, you know, I say that in the piece, I don't go and watch them anymore, really. I work every weekend covering football in the North East. I don't live in London anymore, but there are people like me who will make sure that there is still a Leyton Orient football club. And I think that's what's absolutely fantastic. Like the clubs you've just mentioned there, the supporters will always make sure there is a football club. And I think that's important to remember, because ultimately, you know, it becomes a bit of a cliche, but football clubs are owned, maybe not financially, but they are owned by their football club.
The heart and the spirit are owned by the supporters.
Yes, exactly.
So the club itself can cease to exist, but as long as it's still there in the hearts and the minds of the supporters, as Rangers fans have proved, they did have a stadium, obviously, to go back to, as Leyton Orient may well be the case as well. Well, then hope is not lost.
No.
If you can go back in a Saturday afternoon and still stand beside your mates that you've still been beside for the last 20 years, it's still the same experience. Potential wise, for Leyton Orient, and they've probably never been discussed on Irish radio.
No, this is new, breaking new ground.
And I'm wondering,
is David here?
It's not just the point of Leyton Orient, that this could happen and will continue to happen to English clubs, clubs that people think are solid and are on a safe foundation. Over the next 5-10 years, this will continue to happen as more and more people take interest in buying English football clubs. Well, the position they're in London, so they're just at the south of the Olympic Park, so they're very close to West Ham, they're very close to Tottenham, to Arsenal. What sort of potential is there if somebody did want to buy the club? Is like 5,000 crowds, if they were successful, if they got to the Championship, if in 10 years they got to the Premier League, is there a core support that they're getting 25,000 a week?
Probably. It's interesting, because when Orient go to Wembley, like when the playoff final in 2014, I think they sold 38,000 tickets. Mm-hmm. And London's so big that you get the kind of overspill from... There's been this joke for years about Orient that they're the most popular team in London because they're everybody's second club. Of those Arsenal fans, Tottenham fans, West Ham fans, they all support Orient as well. So I don't know. I mean, they could be a Championship club. But look, if Bournemouth can get to the Premier League, Bournemouth's crowds were about the same size.
But Bournemouth's crowds now, the stadium holds less than 12,000.
Mm, yeah, Orient could get 12,000, 15,000. If they were in the Championship, I think every week, pretty easily.
John in Limerick, had a great night at Brisbane Road in the mid-70s while on holiday visiting my sister in Leytonstone. Tony Grealish, Kitchener et al, 4-3, 2 sent off.
That's a bit before my time.
Tony Grealish play for Leyton Orient?
After all that, you've just undone it.
One question.
Yes, he definitely did.
He's very much up on the present of Leyton Orient. The history of Leyton Orient, maybe not so much.
I was born in 1978.
I'm from Leytonstone too. If I had the money to buy the O's, I would. I'm sure you have, and you could.
Me?
Says Stephen Castleman, Limerick. I don't know if he's overestimating our wealth or just thinks that Nathan, you could buy Leyton Orient.
Nathan's got the money.
As a Brighton supporter, been there, done that, keep the faith, Adrian in Limerick. And again, Brighton, one of those clubs that...
It'd be left to the fans to save that club. It's like, kind of, you mentioned it there about Cork, like, obviously a different league, but it's always left to the fans to pick up the mess. So you might get a saviour coming in and helping you, but in the majority of these cases, it's going to be left to supporters to save a football club. And you mentioned in the piece, I didn't read it, but I liked it on Twitter. I did like it on Twitter and told you how good it was. But you mentioned about the apathy. Like every football fan should have an interest in what's going on, just because it could so easily happen to their club.
And that's very true.
You know?
Tony Grealish played 171 league games for Leyton Orient.
Yeah, Leyton Orient legend, I believe.
Came through the youth system. He was one of your own.
Yeah.
Had his posters on as well.
I'm hanging my head now. My dad will be very upset.
And kind of a cult figure, I guess, in Ireland, Tony Grealish, down through the years.
Don't the socks around the ankles, wasn't that his whole big spiel?
So not only have I insulted a Leyton Orient legend, I've also insulted...
He's also before my time as well, so I'm kind of...
So that is that's our conversation, I think, on Leyton Orient for this week. I think it was a brilliant... Without in any way wanting to make fun of your illness.
No.
You did put it right down in the last paragraph.
It is the last paragraph.
So therefore, if you didn't read it right till the end, you wouldn't have known this.
As somebody in a
good soul would have brought that straight up to the top to make sure people...
I didn't want to make...
So a lot of people go, great article, really enjoyed it. And you're waiting for the... How are you feeling?
Yeah.
And it just never comes.
As a member of the Irish Press Pack, made the mistake of doing today, yes. Yeah.
What we might do, actually, we might take a quick break before we talk Ireland. The latest score is still scoreless between Scotland and England and between Azerbaijan and Northern Ireland, and 17 minutes gone at Porky Rin. Pretty low scoring affair in the Munster football semi-final. It's quite windy down there as well, where Tipperary lead Cork by 2-1.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Ayr. Catch all the sports you love free on the Ayr Sport Pack with Ayr Broadband.
Luke Edwards, And David Snader in studio with us. We are going to talk about Ireland against Austria this time tomorrow. We'll be underway at the Aviva Stadium. David, you've been out there all week and, well, for the last 10, 12 days, really, since the camp got together covering the group. It's been a very quiet build-up, as has almost become the norm now since Euro 2016. Martin O'Neill today, is he talking up the importance of this game, or is he trying to play it down?
He really, I think, like everyone else, he realises now that there's an opportunity for Ireland against this Austria team to really kind of have a bit of daylight in the group. You mentioned there about kind of a quiet week and the build up, but like, this build up stretches back to when the team met up in Cork in May, you know, and then with the trip to America. So a lot similar to the Euros, it's been gradually building and building and building, and it's the key for O'Neill has been making sure that everyone is going to peak for this weekend. That's the kind of has been the kind of the mantra, is what Roy Keane has said as well, kind of since he's been speaking to the media as well. So
Kenny Cunningham spoke about that on the show last night, about these fixtures at the end of the season and the gap from finishing up your league campaign and trying to peak for the end of the league season and then having a lot of downtime and trying to get yourself right back up for what is a huge game, and that that is quite difficult.
Yeah, but if you look at Ireland's game, so if you take it back in the Euros, now obviously it's the Euros and everyone's getting up for a major championship, but that first 50-60 minutes against Sweden, Ireland played some great stuff. Like, they didn't look fatigued at all. Wes Houlihan got the goal. It was obviously, we faded for that last period, and then even going back further to the Scotland game for the qualifier for that game, not a great result, but that first half we played well. Jonathan Walters scored a goal just before half time, then Scotland equalised, and that just seemed to drain the momentum really from the team. So I don't really, like, going into the game, I mentioned there about Kenny saying that, but I don't have any doubts that they'll be ready to actually go and do exactly what O'Neill has been saying all week about being on the front foot and taking the game to them. Don't think there'll be any problem with that. The problem is if they have a setback like they had against Scotland a couple of years ago and like they had against Sweden at the Euros, are they going to just kind of crumble a little bit? Because especially against Sweden, look back now, I know the tournament went well, but after Ireland scored, Houlihan got that goal, Sweden then just took charge. So we can start well and hopefully get ahead in the game, but there's still going to be that sort of nagging doubt, regardless of the absences that Austria have. There's still going to be that doubt about how they finished the game.
I think that doubt is always there for every Ireland game, that whenever we take the lead, whenever we go in front, we are at our most vulnerable for that sort of 10-15 minutes, because automatically we just seem to sit back and invite teams onto us. There's a lot of confidence, Luke, around the place heading into this game, based on the players that Austria are missing, based on the win over in Vienna, and a lot of it based on what Ireland did against Uruguay last Sunday when Wes Houlihan came on, the style of football they played, the energy that was around the place. And David there talks about taking the game to the opposition. Like, it's something that doesn't always happen for Ireland. In fact, it's something that rarely happens for Ireland at home. I just wonder, are we reading too much into that Uruguay game?
Possibly, because it's a friendly, and as Martin and Roy have always said, you're not judged on friendlies, and friendly games bring up these sorts of results. I think you have to be slightly wary for me going into it, because Austria know if they win tomorrow, they're right back in it. I mean, their qualification hopes are revived. If they lose, they're pretty much out of it. So for them, it really is sort of last chance. So I don't think you can underestimate how fired up they're going to be. And I noticed there's been a lot of talk about matching that from Roy particularly. And I think that's important. Ireland are never going to just turn up and beat anyone. They're never just going to turn up and cruise to
unless
a victory.
Unless it's on man.
Well, even then, I think they might labour slightly. they're just not. And I know I'm not being horrible, but because this is something that Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane have both said, they're not good enough to do that. Mm-hmm. Austria have good players. They're a good team. They had a fantastic qualification for the Euros. Brilliant. I mean, they and again, they would have been probably on paper stronger than Ireland going into this tournament. So yes, there is optimism, but Ireland needs to really, if it might need grinding out, but if they can win this, Ireland are in a fantastic position, absolutely fantastic position to qualify for their first World Cup in a long, long time. Since 2002, isn't it, of course? So it's a huge, huge game tomorrow. And I think Roy and Martin, I think as David has said, they've been building to this ever since they got together, and they will be fired up. And I expect them to do it. I expect them to win.
It was touched on earlier on today about kind of using that game against Italy and Lille, is that the blueprint for what we should do, and not just in terms of the personnel but how Ireland played. Like, Luke was right, the chances of Ireland going and smashing a team 3 or 4 nil Like, it's not going to happen, especially against someone like Austria, you know. But what Ireland did against Italy was, like, they play, like, you were there, were you?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen Ireland play as well against a really top side.
And this team is going to be very similar, actually, when you look at it. Yeah, if you take away the three players, Coleman, McCarthy and Long, who are missing, it'll probably be eight of the other players who'll start.
Well, that's it. And, like, that was the game. Well, this is another factor which has been going all week about who is gonna play is like Harry Arthur. I think he now should be a cert to play. Like, you look back at what he did against Austria in Vienna. Like, he was, as I would say, an absolute wreck the head for that Austrian midfield. He, like, was annoying them. He was getting in their face, and they just lost all their composure, especially in that second half when they were actually looking for a goal. He was able to disrupt that. Now today it's a case of, well, will Jeff Hendrick come in and play alongside him? Will Glenn Whelan come in and play alongside him? O'Neill was saying this week about wanting to have a bit of power, have a bit of strength. I think Hendrick could play in there alongside him, sitting in there with kind of maybe.
And he needs a big game, Jeff Hendrick, because for me, he's been disappointing this year. I think he's been slightly disappointing in the Premier League. I haven't seen him play. I mean, he was fantastic at the Euros.
Mm.
Fantastic. But I mean, I was. You know, I don't know how huge amount of managers, but there are a lot of Premier League clubs looking at him. And anyone who asked me, I advise go and buy Jeff Hendrick, fantastic footballer. He's not repeated that since. Either for Burnley or for Ireland, so a big game for him tomorrow. And David's right, if Ireland play like they did against Italy, they win this game, simple as. If they play like they did, that intensity, and it was intensity against Italy, if you remember, they were in their faces, they were smashing into them. If they play,
but they were
like
also smart.
Italy, they were smart. Yeah, they played really well. It wasn't
kept,
yes.
They kept the ball
they
down.
Kept the ball.
They held on to possession when they had an opportunity to do so.
And if they play like that, they win. So that has to be the blueprint. They play like they did against Italy, Ireland win, and they have one foot at the very least in the playoffs for a World Cup.
They have to be confident going into this game. Like, they really, like O'Neill and Keane were saying, oh well, we're not good enough to kind of take things for granted, or we're not good enough to just expect to go and win the game, of course. But like, this Austria team, like, they're missing so many key players, and this is just such a big opportunity that if they let it slip, you've got a whole summer to kind of think about that. O'Neill's going to be thinking about it. Keane will be thinking about it. The players, you would imagine, are going to think about it. They'll know. Like, Damien Duff said it during the week. Like, any player in that team who has a half a brain is going to know that they're there for the taking.
Yeah. There has to be an inbuilt confidence now in this particular group as well for the wins that they've had. So we think back to Trapattoni's time. There were a lot of brilliant draws. Mm. But this team have shown, from Germany to Italy to Austria away, that actually they can go and take that extra step. They can go and get a victory that actually really counts.
Mm-hmm. It's similar to the Bosnia game, actually, this one, in a way, isn't it?
Mm.
But I think they're probably similar standard, Austria to Bosnia. And they handle those two games brilliantly. I see, this is such an important game. It is almost like a playoff game, I feel, because, you know, we were talking before we came on air, they could even turn this into a two-horse race for the top two teams with a win, if results go their way, you know, if Wales get beaten by Serbia. So it is that big. And, yeah, if the players have to realise that, and I'm sure, knowing Martin, and we all know what Roy's like, that is the mood. They will build this up, and a cliche, I know, but they will build this up to be a cup final. They really will for the players.
It's a good point you made earlier on, though. I think you can trust this Ireland team, not even the team, but just the squad, that in big games, they might not always come out on the right side of it, but they're going to play well. They're going to kind of carry out their instructions well. They're not going to just, like, bottle it, for want of a better word. Like, they've shown that in these big occasions that they can actually step up. And the crowd coming tomorrow, whether they're going to be nervy or not, it's going to be important to set the right tone. Like, if you look back earlier in this campaign against Georgia, like, we got out of jail big time there when Seamus Coleman scored that goal, because that was a really poor game. Probably contradicting myself there in terms of what I said about trusting the team, but as you mentioned earlier, they won it, and they got through it. And I think there's a trust there that O'Neill has in the players, and there should be a trust there that the fans should have touring up tomorrow, that, you know, like, they're going to be good enough to get the result, especially against a team like Austria now, who are so weak.
Scoreless still between Scotland and England, and between Azerbaijan and Northern Ireland. Anything happening down in Porky Rin, Dave?
It's absolutely abysmal. And anyone who's a real fan of Cork football must be very upset watching this. They've scored 1 point in 32 and a half minutes of football. It's 27 and a half minutes since they got their only score. And Tipperary will be kicking themselves because in the last 5 minutes they've kicked a free wide, they've kicked one more attempt wide, and they've dropped two attempts short into the hands of the Cork goalkeeper. They could easily be 6 or 7 points up, and whatever sort of a breeze there is at Parkhill Road tonight is favouring Cork in this first half. I'm not saying it's going to be a major factor in the play, but if there is a breeze there, it is in the faces of the Tipperary players. But this is a team that won the All-Ireland 7 years ago, and this is appalling stuff.
53106 is the text number if you want to get in touch. We have David Sneyd and Luke Edwards in studio. We're looking ahead to the Republic of Ireland against Austria. I do wonder, is a danger that we're overestimating the loss to Austria of their injured players and underestimating the loss of our injured players? They're still going to have David Alaba running the show in the middle of midfield. We're missing Coleman, McCarthy and Long.
Well, that's a good point. But Alaba, like, I was just chatting to a couple of Austrian journalists today just to kind of get a feel for just the feeling in that squad, you know. And Alaba, he's only coming back from a knee injury. He strained his knee a few months ago for Bayern Munich. He's had knee problems throughout his career, really. Like, he's missed a fair chunk. Like, I know he scored the goal. We all had nightmares with that goal he scored in the last couple of minutes under trap. But I think we're also overestimating maybe the impact he has, especially on this team. Like, although he does actually sort of seem to be able to overrule the manager, he's the one who decides where he plays. I was chatting to a couple of the journalists today and saying that Marcel Koller would like him to actually be able to play left back, especially some of the problems they're having there. He just flat out refuses to do it. So overestimating Shane Long's loss for us, perhaps, but it's not as if he's a prolific striker and we're missing a goal scorer who kind of will be that fox in the box, you know. I don't think we rely on him too much. I think we'll be able to cope without him. We're going to miss Seamus Coleman without a doubt. Just that leadership, like, just being able to grab a hold of the lads if things aren't going well. He seems to be the one who is able to do it. I think you mentioned James McCarthy. I don't think we'll miss him, to be honest. I think anyone can pass the ball sideways. But
Cutting on James McCarthy. You've spent a lot of time, Luke, covering Martin O'Neill, and the speculation seems to surround probably just that one position, whether he goes with Glenn Whelan or whether he goes with Wes Houlihan. And that may set the tone for the entire afternoon, whether it's Arthur and Hendrick as the deep line two or Arthur and Whelan as the deep line two. This sort of game, historically, with Martin O'Neill, when there is a chance to kill off Austria, no matter what he says, a chance to win, and instead of it being a four-team race, it's at the very most a three-team race for two places. Is it in O'Neill's blood to go all out to say, all right, this is the opportunity, let's go, Wes Houlihan, let's really take the game to Austria?
I think he'll take the game. I think he'll know, again, as I said, about building up to this and that cliche of it being a cup final. I think he goes for it. I think he goes to win, because you can't pass up the opportunity to try and kill off a rival, and you're at home. It's the end of the season. You've been together. He's had a long time to work with the players as well, don't forget. So they'll have formulated a plan. They'd have been working on it. Yeah, I expect he goes for it. I think he goes to win the game, and that means Houlihan plays, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He started in Vienna, so we trust him as well. Again, it comes back to trust. He started Wes Houlihan in Vienna, and he's the one who has put the most faith in him out of any Ireland manager over the last few years. You know, he's the one who has given Houlihan his chance.
I guess the feeling is Glenn Whelan, there's a trust in Glenn Whelan in his experience, but we shouldn't forget that he did drop Glenn Whelan for the Italy and France games at Euro 2016. And Ireland's best period of football during this qualification campaign was probably the last hour in Vienna after Glenn Whelan came off injured.
But look, those games were in a tournament competition. They've played how many games in a short space of time. It was more so for rest. He started the two games before that. Didn't fare too well. Like, Houlihan, he's been one of the... He was actually probably the most experienced player to come into the squad down in Cork a few weeks ago. He's been in, getting himself ready. He could have easily have asked O'Neill in position, well, give us another week off just to have a bit of a holiday. He's been in since day one of this, and just the player he is, I think he has to play. He has to play in that middle bit, just to kind of be that link, because we're not going to be able to play just long balls to John Walters to chase. He's going to have to link up, and Wes is the ideal man to kind of be able to do that, you know.
I'm nodding. That's not very good for radio, is it?
No.
Me nodding. Yes, no.
I agree is what you
I
need to say.
I completely agree with what David has said.
Everyone sounds very confident then?
Yeah, we're going to probably get beaten 3-0 now. But just confident because of everything this Irish team has done in the past. The manager that we have, Austria's problems, just Ireland have the momentum, and it's a very big thing, and I think they're more than capable, and with Austria's problems as well. I think everyone's point, it'd be narrow, it's not going to, as you say, we're not going to hockey them 3 or 4 nil, but I think we could strangle the life out of the game.
It'd be great if they did though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be something we haven't seen in
a long time. Yeah, I might miss my flight on Monday.
We'd have a good night tomorrow night.
Oh, we would.
Yeah, lads, thanks a million for coming into the studio, David Snaid and Luke Edwards. And Luke, best of luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
We will be in touch next time. There's some calamitous event in British politics. Yeah, you're our go-to
guy. We had
expected to be giving you a call on Friday, and then it sort of turned out
all right for me. But no, it's almost the anniversary of Brexit. Of course, one of my famous meltdowns.
We might do an hour-long special on it sometime.
Yeah, brilliant.
David Snaid, David, and Luke, thank you very much.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.